I think rural areas are really in danger because they don't have the resources. And I mean by danger, I mean they, if people are needing housing or if they're in a domestic violence situation or they need food banks, like it's much more difficult to get those resources in rural areas. And if you don't have transportation, that's really, really tragic. You can't go anywhere and get anything. So, and I find that now rural areas are shrinking. I know where I came from in Nova Scotia, like the resources are really shrinking. And I'm sure that's the same in, you know, Sackville, Memramcook, in those areas. You know, I think you've got some good people working on your behalf in our provincial government, like Megan Mitten. But still, we need more resources there, and to make sure that people don't. How are they going to get to Moncton for those resources? So I worry about that, and I'm doing a speech in a few weeks in Ottawa about violence in rural areas, so domestic violence. So that's been on my mind, so I'll be doing more research on the area of rural, because that's close to my heart, growing up in a rural community and knowing that there wasn't a lot there for people that needed help.
So coming from a rural area and then working in an urban area like Moncton, which is regarded as a regional hub, could you comment on just how people sort of wind up migrating or you know, kind of gathering in a place like Moncton, and sort of the relationship between rural poverty and urban poverty in that sense?
Okay, that's a big question, but I guess to say that I see and what I'm hearing is that more people are moving to Moncton, especially those that are homeless. And I think probably it's because there's more resources here. So coming from a rural area, like I found coming here, of course, there's more going on and more things and transportation, all that sort of thing. But I think that that needs to be looked at in detail. I'm sure there's studies out there on that, but we're seeing the rural areas depleting. And some are growing well, like I think Sackville's doing okay, but I'm thinking about some other areas where there's nothing there now. They don't even have a grocery store or a gas station or anything. So if they don't have those basic essentials, will they have any other resources? I don't think so. So I think we need to take a good look at that and how we can replenish, if you want, the rural areas and hold people to be able to live there so that there's things there for them.
You mentioned during your talk just now here at St. George's an initiative for universal basic income.
Yes.
of sorts. Could you talk about that initiative and where it's at in the capital now?
Well, is moving very, very slowly. A couple of years ago, about 50 senators, we met together on Zoom, is that what we could do then, to talk about this issue, and we had a lot of people that were speaking to us about it, like Hugh Siegel, former Senator Siegel, and Senator Art Eagleton, who were big proponents for this, and they're on two sides of the coin. One's a conservative, one's a liberal, but they agreed that this is what needs to happen. Many, many studies have been done in the world and in Canada. We had MinCom in the West, and we've had other initiatives, but now it's come into a bill in the House of Commons and in the Senate, and it's to call for a national strategy on guaranteed livable income. So where it's at right now is it's been spoken to in the Senate and moving towards committee, but it's still a long way from becoming law. And I think it's going to take that political will. And I don't know why that's not there. And there's a lot of people that just go on about, oh, well, everybody just got money from the government during the pandemic and, you know, they're not wanting to work. But that's not true. We've done some studies on that. People want to work. People are back at work. We do have a labor shortage in Canada. And it's been coming for a long time. So guaranteed livable income will not impede people from working. It'll help them to live a better quality of life and perhaps gain some more education or gain some work and be able to take care of their families. So it's still a long ways away, but I'm hopeful that sometime we'll see that. I know several councils in New Brunswick, municipal councils, have passed a law on that, and they said they support that. PEI, all levels of government, has supported it. But it's got to take that political will, and that's not there yet.
And just finally, an announcement by the New Brunswick provincial government today in St. John that roughly $100 million being invested to build, I think it's government-owned public housing for the first time in 38 years. Your thoughts on this, you know, considering the gravity of the housing crisis right now?
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic because it's always good to hear good news about housing. I hope they're not going to do that they did 30 years ago and build them all in one place, you know, all in the same area, because that created, you know, not a healthy environment for some people. However, I think it's good that we're moving forward with housing monies, but let's put some money into wraparound programs. By that, I mean money for mental health, addictions, like you know, other issues like the young woman spoke today about autism. Like, let's look at all the issues that are surround housing. It's not just about having a house. There's other issues that are needed. So cautiously optimistic that that's a first step, but let's push it forward with our surplus that we have in New Brunswick.